You're listening to STP Radio.
Hello, software test professionals. This is Mark Tomlinson, your loyal host of STP Radio. And I'm very excited because today I have a guest, Mr. Richard Bradshaw. You might know him as the Friendly Tester or Friendly Tester on Twitter. He's a citizen of the United Kingdom, living on a quiet street in Beeston, Nottingham. Richard, how are you? Welcome to STP Radio.
I'm very good. Cheers for having me, Mark. How are you?
Yeah, I'm really, really good. Now, you and I didn't get a chance to actually talk enough at the recent test bash down in Brighton, but I understand that, you know, from someone like yourself who lives, you know, in Nottingham or originally from Manchester, being in Brighton could be a little bit scary. It's to the south, maybe. It's not, you know.
Yeah, right? It's a little south than I tend to travel. I'm quite forward in my dislike of London because it's really busy. But I think once you've gone through London, Brighton's actually nice. But it's a long journey for us.
Okay, so it's the journey. Brighton itself is just delightful, I found. And we had actually nice weather for March. That was pretty awesome.
Yeah, we did. It was really good weather. I was going to say Brighton is a really, really nice place. It's just like driving there would be a nightmare, and it takes a good over 3.5 hours on the train from Nottingham. So it's worth it. It's definitely worth it. Test Bash is awesome.
And if I'm not sure where Test Bash will be next year, but we'll see. Is it going to be in Brighton?
It's always in Brighton. Yep.
So very good. And so one of the things that you recently had given a talk at Less Test just a few weeks ago was on the topic of sort of automation is just a tool. And I thought that was a great place to start the conversation because we have a lot of folks in at least the STP community and the greater tester community at large that are always have an appetite for talking about automation and where it fits. So maybe you could recap kind of the lightning pitch you gave just a little bit.
Yeah. So the theme of the talk was that, you know, as an industry, when you mention the word automation to testers or just people in software development from a testing in a testing context, they immediately tend to think of like end-to-end tests or checks, like a full piece of automation that runs a check and posts the results somewhere. Whereas for me, I believe automation is simply we're automating a task or process that we would want to do ourselves anyway, but we want to speed the process up. So essentially, it just becomes a tool. It's like any other tool that you might download off the web. Like you want a proxy, doing that yourself manually is too much, so you get a tool.
Yes.
So I think that's obviously an extreme tool. You have to be quite smart to do that. But essentially, we're providing something that we're creating something that we're going to use to make our job to make that specific task easier. So based on that, I think we're missing a trick as testers to not view automation as a tool, because then there's so much more that we can do with automation to assist our testing. That technically is automation because we'll be automating part of the process we want to do. We're just not automating the whole journey.
Yeah. If you really look at it just a tool, you might forget the meaning that is imbued upon that as this is part of my testing. This is not really separate from it sort of sticks as one in your thinking like a screwdriver would for an electrician doing, you know, doing screwdriving or something.
Yeah, I think a lot of us, we tend to view it as, you know, if we automate that, we don't have to think about it anymore. Like, you know, that's part of our testing is now done. Whereas really, you know, we're not like if, you know, I'm fond of calling it checking. So I would say that the checking is very important and it suits itself to automation. But in the whole picture, we're actually doing testing and we're using automation to assist us with our checking. So in that sense, it is just serving purpose as a tool, but it doesn't exist on its own. It has to be triggered by somebody and its results have to be reviewed.
Yeah. Especially if, as we start increasing the frequency of use in unattended continuous integration, that regression suite gets run more and more and more and more frequently. I also think there's a meta learning that happens with regression where if you have the net of checkpoints across an entire regression suite, there are things that may change within the code base that reveal bugs that were there all the time. And suddenly the right alignment released something. And so if you're just running it and sort of check it, set it and forget it as automation, there's actually all sorts of new bugs that can come out of regression that may not always go back to something that you would do manually, or think as, you know, hey, I'm going to pull out this automated script and run that.
I agree. Yeah, I think, the automation as a tool in that context is fantastic. You know, you should run it. You've invested heavily in it. It should run 24/7.
Yeah.
No reason why you shouldn't want to do that.
Yeah.
It's not. It doesn't cost you. You know, your machines are probably running anyway, so it doesn't cost you any money. And yes, it likely might find. It potentially probably will find more bugs if you're continuously running it.
Yeah, there could be other weird anomalies. There could be some very weird production-like bug that makes it in there.
Definitely, but also it's not just focusing on the actual system under test. You might find bugs with your framework. Certain times of the day, the framework might stop working for whatever reason, or if your CI is running several tests on the same machine at the same time, you know, there might be some cross automation bleed that you're going to have to address.
Yeah, it brings up a good question about automation frameworks and people sort of taking the raw test tool and building more elaborate or maybe reusable code or making it easier to implement automation. I'm just curious, in your experience, you know, what's the good and the bad of that? Then I have my own experience, but I'm curious what your thoughts are on really going after frameworks.
I think for me, I personally believe that, you know, we need to design our own frameworks. We need the tools off the shelf. You know, they will serve a purpose. But as soon as you start relying on automation more, I think you need to have more control of it. And I think you can only get that if you code it yourself. So I'm very much of people going down the route of designing a really good architecture for their automation, for specific a test automation or check. Mm-hmm. Where we, you know, you need to build an architecture that allows you to do all the things you want to do, such as create data in your database, call APIs, control a website, and then you build several frameworks on top of that for whatever purpose you want to be. So one of those might be checking, so you'll build a certain framework just for your checking. But if you write the code in such a way, you've then got a code base to create several more frameworks on top of that for whatever reasons you might want to do.
That's interesting. So it's actually a sort of a layered approach in terms of frameworks borrowing on top of one another, so you're not constantly having to rewrite. You think about app development, building on top of frameworks. That's what we're doing with, say, Java and Spring, or we're doing in .NET with just layers and layers of frameworks. I'm a performance guy, so that always scares me that the framework itself gets so slow it doesn't execute any tests. So yeah, I probably have to watch out for that.
Right.
What do you think about the idea in terms of organizing a team that, you know, some people, a lot of people ask the question like, hey, if I have a mix of automated testers versus developers versus people do manual exploratory testing, how do I manage a team like that? And I know you've worked at several different companies in certain roles and even leadership roles where maybe you're helping organize and give advice on how to organize. What are your thoughts on that automation versus manual testing kind of thing?
I think back to the whole, you know, checking is an integral part of any approach to testing, especially when you've got a tool that's going to a product that's going to evolve over time.
Yeah.
And automation fits perfectly with checking. But I think it's you need to have the skills within the team, but I don't think it should stay as one person doing it all the time. And by team as well, I don't just mean testers. I mean the developers as well.
Mm-hmm.
Some automation, you know, when we're talking about architectures before and frameworks, a lot of the time, once they're built, it's like becomes a maintenance process. So, you know, someone with the skill set needs to maintain it, but also it should be relatively easy enough for anyone in the team to write some automation. Because we're not talking about complicated test scenarios, but, you know, we're talking about simple checks. So I think anyone can learn how to do that. So in that sense, then we have, multiple people can do it. And then, I think I'd be really uncomfortable in a team if I was just the guy who wrote automation all the time.
Sure.
It's not exciting. Once you've built the framework, that's probably the exciting bit. After that, maintenance isn't great. But also, your thought process as a tester will get stagnant you'll lose your creative edge because you're just doing, essentially, you're doing test cases all day long. You're just automating them. And there's very little, you know, there's very little thought process in that. So I'd rather have a team. In my past, I've had people who can do everything. Yeah. I know that's not always possible, but if you built a framework that's say, currently people's favorite is building BDD tools into their automation, any tester then can write an automated check because they just need to know the steps that are available, string them together, and they'll create a test. So they don't need to know about the back end in that instance. So then your team can get up to speed and write automation, but also mix them around. So they are doing some manual testing, they are doing exploratory testing, and they might realize themselves that, you know, there's something in the automation that they could utilize to help them with those other approaches to testing.
Yeah, you may be familiar with a guy by the name of Ben Simo, and Ben's the quality frog. And I remember talking with him once about building a tool to do exploratory performance testing. And it would be a form of automation, but it would be, I want to say it's very tactile. It's the wrong word because we're in the software virtual. It'd be like virtually tactile, where you could sort of grab an API virtually. Or metaphorically, and say, all right, I'm going to hammer this thing with 100,000 hits per second while I do something else. It's like, it makes sense if I think about like Stephen King's The Lawnmower Man, where you're in a total virtual reality. But I don't think that the testing tools are quite able to give you a full consciousness within a virtual reality to test your APIs. I think that we're probably a ways off from that.
Yeah, I think so. I had a conversation with Doug Hoffman at Belgium Testing Days.
Yeah.
And he's a big fan of exploratory automation. But I've never 100% got to grips with it. Like I understand, you know, we could have a system. They use the example of Google Maps. Mm-hmm. So they would do, Google would randomly pick a city, two cities, and do the search, and then look at the results, say, from Manchester to Philadelphia. And then it would do Philadelphia to Manchester.
Yep.
And it would compare like the distance and the times and various like key destinations along the way. And then it would just sit there doing that all day long. So in a sense, it is exploratory, but it's only ever got a few oracles. And it's never going to learn from what it's doing.
Yeah.
So that's the bit I get concerned with.
Because how does it, if you don't have a sentient being of some sort, a sapient being that's actually guiding and growing and relating, that from an oracle perspective, relating is what derives meaning from what you observe. And so those differences are how those things relate. How would you would have to have a human being interacting to some extent, unless we talked about, automation in a framework actually having some kind of artificial intelligence. You remember Web 3.0? Like this was probably 6 years ago, the Web 3.0 was supposed to have artificial intelligence as part of the next generation of the web. And I don't know, but maybe we're creating Skynet in artificial intelligence in your framework. Have you ever built anything like that?
No, I think that the only thing I did at was tempted to explore recently was after, that was actually after Belgium Testing Days, was trying to, I think a lot of us, we should probably try and code more oracles into our automation. So a lot of us just have one fixed assertion at the end of a test, say.
Yeah.
If that assertion fails, then, the test falls over while it fails. But I think we should also perhaps then carry on and do it, collect a bit more information as well. So perhaps we could start coding, several layers of oracles into our assertions.
Oh, definitely, definitely.
That might actually introduce some, it'll certainly get us more information and also might reveal more bugs that are normally hidden by the first one.
Yeah, exactly. So this brings me to another question. The more and more we give the framework either a little bit more capability to draw decisions from either multiple oracles and apply them, I think there's also maybe some fear. I don't know if it's quite fear, just apprehension about people in the measurement world, in the metrics world, that say, how do I measure my manual testing and have visibility into the value of my manual testers? versus how do I have visibility into the value of automation? So how do you make automation, the value of it, visible? Is it just quantitative metrics, or are there other ways that you want to basically see that that regression suite and all the different frameworks you build are actually valuable?
I'm not a big fan of saying that, you know, like automation needs to have like an ROI or a lot of metrics associated to it.
Okay.
I've had, you know, my bit of a plug, my upcoming CAST talk is very much on this topic. And the issue there, I think, is that automation is there to serve the team. It's, you know, like we said before, checking is important and we need to do it, and automation's perfect for it. But what it does is it frees the testers up to do other things that can help the testing team. A lot of people say, oh, if I've got loads of automation, then I can do loads of exploratory testing. And yeah, it's true, you could. But there's also lots of other things you need to do. You need to build relationships with the developers and the product owners. You need to look at the new stories that might be coming through. You might need to do some coaching and mentoring within your team. There's lots of things you need to do. So I think automation gives the team more time to do other things. And like, that's incredibly hard to measure. But you would hopefully see, you know, that your team is finding a lot more interesting bugs. They're collecting a lot more information that's useful for the business. And they probably are. I would hope they would be a lot happier as well. Because, you know, they're having fun being creative and being testers.
Yeah. I remember speaking with, I think it was Griffin Jones, about sort of a session-based time management for testing, and actually understanding that most companies, if you're in employment of some sort as a tester, they obviously, everyone tracks their time, you know, hours spent doing things. So it's actually a brilliant way to make sure we categorize the value differently depending on what type of testing or what type of activity, like you say, be it mentoring or building relationships or communicating the meaning of a test, designing new tests, going and investigating production, you know, how I've, you know, maybe there's some new stuff or old stuff that's like, well, I tested it, but I've never seen talk to anyone in the real world that actually used that. And it can be incredibly valuable. And the only way to really see it, if you basically gave a diverse categorization, maybe I see a pie chart with different colors, because managers love the colors. If you said, what percentage of your time is spent, you know, in different types of valuable, here's all the different things we value, and we're spread pretty evenly, instead of we spend 90% of our time just heads down, trapped in a room, automating tests.
Yeah, I agree as well. I think, and I've been very lucky in the teams that I've had where I've not really had this, that level of management who's not really close to me, if you know what I mean, who's not really, like, you know, knows what it is we're doing. And I think that's another thing that testers could do with that time, you know, educate the rest of the company on what it is you do, because a lot of people do have the opinion that, you know, testing can be automated. So, you know, we need to sell them the skills that we have to offer, and show them, you know, what testers are capable of.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we can get that by being closer to management, but also doing the things you said, like, you know, report our metrics in different ways. You know, testers aren't about finding bugs. You know, we collect information, and we need to give that we need to share that information and tell the story of that information to people who matter. And a lot of the time, you know, the managers aren't involved in that, but they should be, because they will have a better appreciation of what it is we're doing. Yeah.
Speaking of managers, because we love them and they support us. I find to some extent, you know, there's influences on management, especially around testing and different reporting structures. When it comes to automation, sometimes, again, people get the idea that this is about just cutting headcount in manual testing. We're going to automate you guys out of a job. That's been a classic fear in all kinds of automation, even development or operations, any kind of automation, you know, in other industries. How do you make sense of how would you help a manager understand the difference between, you know, automating with tool X versus, like you described at the in your lightning talk, sort of, there are lots of different tools, and the perception of what a tool or a vendor can do for you is different?
I think I get the first bit. So that is one of the old stories that, you know, we can get rid of two testers by bringing in automation, but it's actually nonsense, because The automation, you know, like I said earlier, it's a tool. It needs to be triggered by someone. The results need to be checked by someone. It needs to be maintained by somebody. It's not an approach to testing. Like, it is just a tool. It's doing a job for the testing team. And so I think the key that I've had recently, if I've used the checking versus testing definitions by James and Michael to actually educate other members of the team, and by quite simply just saying, look, a check isn't intellectual. It doesn't take a lot of thought to create. You're giving me these, you know, user stories or requirements, and we're simply seeing if it does what it was intended to do. You know, it's not. And by that, I mean the simple thing as, you know, if it was, you can sign up, then, you know, the automation could sign up and there's an account in there. But the issue there is, again, that's very simplistic, and you need testers to be able to then test if that account was actually created correctly. Does it, can you log in with it? Does it have the right details in it? Can you use other parts of the system with that login? If you focus solely on checking, you're always focused on just a small little area. Because again, like you said earlier, your automation can't think. So I use the word dumb. Automation is dumb. It should be dumb. It's got no reasons to be intelligent, because your testers are there to do the intelligent work.
Yeah, it's as smart as the critical thinking that you put into it as a tester or a designer. Yeah. My last question, and this kind of rises out of some of the other topics we're seeing that are coming into STP's proposal chain right now, is the idea of, you know, testing and DevOps. And I don't know if you've worked in shops that would call themselves DevOps or pseudo DevOps.
Yeah, I worked at a place recently, for 6 months that had a DevOps team.
Yeah. So do you, and in what way do you see automation being the wedge that keeps the door open for testers to partake in DevOps?
Well, at this current role, the automation was ran every time they released to a production machine.
Okay.
The difficult bit there is people, again, relying on your automation after you've done a production release. So I think there needs to be some testing taking place after that. It doesn't have to be by a tester, but a tester is probably the best person to come up with the scenarios that we might want to check after we've done a release to production. So they can definitely educate the DevOps engineers on what they should be looking for after they've done a production, after they've done a release to production,
I think to some, if you're a purely manual testing shop, and DevOps has a DevOps engineer generally, or tech ops, they get into doing lots of automation of all those processes. And sometimes there's, if you're not connected like a machine, like the Borg, into the DevOps automation, it's hard to put a manual human being's brain into that automation. So sometimes it forces your hand to automate your testing more, as the way to maintain your position and say, oh, well, at least I'm the test designer that's going into this automation to help DevOps pre and post release. I think that could be really influential. The other part I thought that might be interesting is, a lot of times we're thinking only proactively in the design of our tests. And I met with Seth Elliott, chatted with him recently from Microsoft, and he has a data-driven quality sort of learning from production with data sciences on how we can actually leverage information, error information and such back into making stronger, better tests and actually informing manual testers. So I thought there might be something interesting to make the automation framework adaptable to what it can learn from certain behaviors in production.
So there's a few things I'll pick up on there, actually. Another thing about DevOps you just mentioned is, when this current that company, we had a lot of monitoring. And the monitoring was great from a tester's point of view, because we were able to, you know, we had things like how many active users there was, what was our throughput for that day, which machines, you know, their CPU usages, and all these, you know, real-time stats were all up on the board.
Yeah.
No way near anything as I've seen Noah Sussman say they had at Etsy, but, you know, we had some graphs and they were visual.
Yeah.
And the other bit there is, I've done this once at a place, is where we adapted our automation framework to actually not going to say do performance testing talking to you, but to do some basic performance testing for us. So what it did is we had like a threshold, and it will check the previous automation run. And for such things, so some of the WebDriver requests, we would see how long they took. And then we'd have a factor of like 10% if whether we would want to fail that test if it's longer than last time. Well, that could actually be a perfect place to use the real-time stats you're talking about.
You wouldn't necessarily just correlate to, say, the previous run, but you could correlate to what's the last 24 hours in production.
Exactly. So, you know, if you were doing automation lower down, such as, you know, calling an API, as opposed to doing like a long-distance, you know, user journey example, you know, you could have, if you had a public API, you could see in real time what your users are experiencing. And like you said, you could work out a number and the automation could learn from that number, or it could just use it every time it ran.
Yeah.
And then you'd be getting, you know, real useful data on your test, on your, you know, test environment or local machine, whatever you were using. And would give you a better insight instead of a lot of people do this. As soon as things get released to live, performance might go up by a second and people don't notice.
Yeah.
Until it's gone up by a second five times, and then suddenly, 5 seconds. That's unacceptable.
I think it also observing things like the sequence flow. You mentioned, you know, what journey they're on or what flow through the application they're going after. If you start observing some of that analytic data, aside from the performance stuff, which is I love and it's totally interesting to me, but from the flow that you'll see, you can check your assumptions in your test design as to what those common flows are. You may find that real users on a given release change how they use the app in on the whole, and making the framework, like a framework on top of a framework on top of a framework, which you mentioned before, which is then wrapped in a burrito and then covered in a pizza and put in a blueberry pancake. You could actually have those analytic flows sort of inform the sequence and try different things. I think that when we get back to this thing of what's the real value of doing automation, two guys just having a chat across the Atlantic on Skype can come up with 15 other ideas of this would be valuable, this would be interesting, and we could get it to be a little bit more of a smarter framework. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the bit there is what, you know, is that it doesn't have to be, as you said, it doesn't have to be an end-to-end journey. We could utilize automation to serve any little step of what we've just discussed, and actually get more value out of that tool.
Yeah, very cool. So, Richard, I mean, for somebody getting started, let's say they're a brand new tester and that's their first job, maybe they have some coding skills. You know, in school they always teach you how to code, but they don't teach you how to test very well. You know, if someone has an aptitude around coding, but they really don't like the developer lifestyle, I mean, do you invite them to try testing manually and automated, or would you actually have people just jump in, learn WebDriver or learn a different tool and just jump into the automation game?
I think code itself, I think anyone can learn. You know, you've still got to have a desire to, you know, obviously want to use it. But I think it's a good point. Like, I got into testing because at uni, my placement year was testing, but I also did automation in my placement year as well as did some coding. Mm-hmm. But I never liked coding all the time.
Right.
But I like testing what it is I created. So I think testing does give people who like code but like testing that opportunity to do a bit of both still. So I would definitely encourage anyone who's likes doing some coding but not full time to, you know, delve into test automation. You know, a lot of companies do have roles that just for that. You know, people like the software developer in test, you know, where their job is just to create tools for the test team. Or a lot of people do have, you know, as we said, people's job is just to write automation. But I think it is, you know, there's so many skills to get from writing automation. I have a better understanding of the production code, how it hangs together, where I can find little ways in. So I think it's a good idea, but I don't think everyone needs to do it.
Yeah, yeah. So I can still see people that drift towards product ownership or even technical product ownership, testers who don't really want to get into automation, but they really want to do critical thinking about real user behaviors, the experience, the flow, the business logic. I mean, there's plenty of place to go around, and they're still somewhat testers at heart, I think, in the end.
I think the important thing there as well is that, you know, teams need those people. Not everyone needs to know, but the team needs to be able to deliver those tools. And also, businesses need to be aware that, you know, spending a day creating such tools is going to be beneficial to the business, even though it's not a day developing the actual product.
Yeah.
These are going to help the rest of the, they are going to help the product in the long run, just, you know, not right now.
Yeah. And be able to articulate that both quantitatively, if that's what you need, but, you know, obviously qualitatively, put the two together. In the performance world, we're always meshing qualitative and quantitative. It's always fun. You're very confusing.
Yeah,
absolutely. All right. So, so Richard, thank you very much for joining me on this episode of STP Radio. On behalf of the whole community, we appreciate the time you spent with us today.
I enjoyed it.
Very good. And of course, I will ask, you mentioned a couple of events like Less Test and stuff. Where might folks come and meet up with you or come to hear you present on these topics or other topics in the near future?
So I'm going to be at CAST in New York in August.
Okay.
Talking there on the so-called benefits of automation.
Cool.
And I will be talking about... not automation, but exploratory testing, Agile Testing Days.
Agile Testing, it's also in August, or is it later?
Yeah, that's in November, I think, in Germany.
Okay.
And that's it for this year, I think.
Very cool.
It's already been a busy year.
And then, of course, hopefully we'll connect with you at Test Bash in the UK next year, which I have to get. There are actually, proposals are open. Call for Papers is open.
It is open, yeah. I think it's open till August.
Yeah, excellent. Richard, I will also be at CAST in New York City, so I'll see you there.
See you there.
Thanks, Richard.
See you. Bye.
Thank you for listening to another episode of STP Radio. As your host, it's my pleasure to bring these intriguing and engaging conversations to assist you in your quest to become a better software tester. Please be aware that this podcast is a production of the Software Test Professionals Organization and is copyrighted and protected via the Creative Commons Share with Attribution Non-Derivative Licensing. For more information, please visit www.softwaretestpro.com. And don't forget, this upcoming November is the STPCon Fall Conference in Denver, Colorado in the USA. Between now and then, there are multiple online training events coming up on performance testing, risk-based testing, testing automation, agile testing, and software test leadership. Visit www.softwaretestpro.com/training to find out more. On behalf of myself and the entire STP community, please share this podcast with your fellow testers and developers and managers. Thanks for listening, and be sure to join us on the next episode of STP Radio.